Because it's perfect for us. We can walk into town to a restaurant to have a drink, shop, but we've got a yard. We've got neighbors in a nice neighborhood, and it's not Stepford land.
He's right, Tisha sighed. He's right, and still it's crazy. But I want that house. Two? No, three, counting Monroe, of my best pals going after what they want. And hey, me too. Come back for dinner tonight, Maya. You and Joe and Colin will celebrate. I haven't even talked to Tisha about it yet, and Joe and I need to talk some more.
About what? Tisha asked.
Maya's going to buy the best shop in town, but she needs you to look at the numbers. Bring them tonight. You'll take a look, won't you, Tish?
Sure.
Great. Come at 5. We'll have wine. Tisha can take a look, and Sadie and I will run herd on the kids.
Bossy, Tisha said to Maya. Tell me.
Organized, efficient, and goal-oriented. It's been a hard few weeks.
Adrian slid an arm around Tisha's waist, around Maya's.
So fresh starts, new ventures, and going after what you want. That all works for me.
We'll see if the numbers work for me and Joe, and what Tisha has to say. But I know I can speak for him when I say we'd love to come to dinner. Nobody turns down a meal at Casa Rizzo.
Meanwhile, she bent down to lift Colin.
I've got to get this one home. We'll see you tonight. And thanks in advance, Tisha. Numbers, business, projections? It's who I am.
After they waved Maya off, Tisha turned to Adrian. Which shop? How long has it been in business? Why are the owners selling? Where's it located?
I'll have those answers and more when we sit on the porch with some lemonade.
10 weeks later, Tisha lived on Mountain Laurel Lane, Maya owned a business, and Adrian stood in her new studio with Kayla.
It's perfect. It's just exactly right. I was nervous when you talked about doing a light whitewash on the fireplace, but you were right there, too. It softens the brick.
Do you love it?
I love it. I want you to love it.
I love it. You took what I wanted, or thought I did, and made it better. Refinishing the hardwood, completely worth it. Setting the bar up as a smoothie station, adding that pottery tray of wheatgrass speaks to the nutrition angle of fitness, and it still feels homey, accessible.
The good, natural light had the refinished floors glowing. A big seagrass basket held colorful yoga mats, while an old coat rack served as visible storage for exercise bands. She'd used floating shelves for stability balls so they looked like wall art. Instead of a standard free weight rack, Kayla had repurposed an old wine rack.
I love the way you used some of what was here. My grandparents' things, my great-grandparents', like that cabinet. Using it for holding towels, sweatbands, yoga blocks, and putting plants and candles on that old bench. It puts the home in home gym.
So the little sitting area over by the fireplace isn't too much?
Nope, and I'll use it. The colors work too. You were right about the soft, sagey green. I thought it would be too gray and dull, but it's just soft, and it makes the equipment colors pop. The green of the plants go vibrant against it. Any angle I stream from is going to work.
Absently, Adrian lowered her hand to rub Sadie's head as the dog sat by her side.
It was thoughtful of you to find those family pictures, have them framed for the mantle.
You kept saying home, and what's home without family?
Well, Kayla, you just nailed your first professional design job. It won't be your last.
I'm so happy!
She bounced in her lavender running shoes.
You said it was okay if I took pictures and used them in my portfolio.
Absolutely. And I'll write your first client review.
Oh, God!
And I know you head back to college soon, but if you can squeeze in another consult, my friends Tisha and Monroe could use a little help on their new house.
Eyes widened. Mouth dropped open.
You're kidding.
Not kidding. I told Tisha if you had time, you'd stop by after you left here. I'll give you her address. She's right on Mountain Laurel Lane.
I know the house. I know it. Everybody knows about them moving here. It's such a great house. I'll go right now. Oh, my God.
Thank you, Kayla, for giving me exactly what I needed.
Adrian offered a hand, but Kayla just went in for a hug.
You're not just my first client. You're going to be my favorite client forever. Bye, Sadie.
She raced for the glass doors, then stopped, posed.
I'm an interior designer.
Laughing, she jogged away. Adrian knew how it felt to see a dream realized. Thinking of just that, she took out her phone to text Hector, Lauren, and Tisha.
Hi, gang. Time to coordinate for our first production in my new home studio, which looks freaking fantastic. I've got the theme, have the routines nearly nailed down. My schedule's open, so work out when you can fit me in and we'll go. Tisha, Kayla's on her way to you now. And guys, wait until you see Tisha's new house. Not to mention my new studio. Talk soon.
She jogged up two flights of stairs, delighted the house was empty because her grandfather had gone into work. Every day now, she thought, as she went into her bedroom to change. Sometimes just for an hour, but often for most of the day. The work, she thought, his love of it, brought him both joy and solace. She felt the same about her own. After donning workout gear, she went back down to her new space. She opened the glass doors so Sadie could wander out as she pleased or needed. She put on her basic keep the beat music, set a timer, and facing her mirrored wall, got to work. As she rehearsed and refined the warm-up, she had a flash of herself as a child, watching her mother rehearse. The house in Georgetown, the sleek room with mirrored walls and her mother's reflection. How she'd yearned. How, alone again, she'd danced in that room, imagining herself a ballerina or a Broadway star, or what she'd become. And so good, so exceptional, her mother would watch her with the same yearning she felt. Then the man had come, bringing fear and blood and pain. His face, she remembered every detail of it, blurred everything else from her vision, so she had to stop the timer. No point, no point, no point going back there. Closing her eyes, she breathed through it. Even the media rarely dug that horrid old story up now. Old, old news, no point. She reminded herself she rarely had moments like this, when the fear rushed back, turned her cold, then hot, then breathless. She'd pushed through it. She had pushed through it. I'm strong, she told her reflection, and I'm not defined by one horrible day in the whole of my life. She started to turn the timer back on, then caught a glimpse of Sadie in the mirror, sprawled a few feet back, watching her. Yearning, Adrian thought. Instead of turning on the timer, she walked back to sit on the floor, nuzzle the big bear of a dog who made love noises in her throat, a sound that always made Adrian laugh.
I'll come back to this. Let's you and me go outside and play chase the ball.
You made time for the ones you loved, she thought, as she went outside, picked up the big orange ball that put a light of joy in Sadie's eyes. If her childhood had taught her anything, it was to make time for her passion, her responsibilities, and for the ones she loved. Chapter 10. Through the summer after his wife's death, Raylan worked almost exclusively from home, and almost always at night. Sleep hadn't been his friend since Laura Lee's death, so he turned nights into work time and snatched some sleep in the early morning hours. He napped when, if, the kids napped. He couldn't handle the idea of a nanny, couldn't stand to bring yet another drastic change into his children's lives, and he couldn't bear the idea of leaving them with someone else. And since for the first few weeks Bradley often woke up crying in the middle of the night, sleep became more luxury than priority. He'd never forget the help, the comfort, the attention his mother and sister had provided, but they couldn't stay forever. He had responsibilities, first to his kids, then to his work. And the work not only provided for his family, but kept his company solvent and employees who counted on him paying their bills. For snatches of time, he could lose himself in the work or in the needs of his kids. The laundry, the grocery runs, the food prep, the attention, the trips to the park. The everything that added up to trying to give them a sense of security, a sense of normal. He'd always wondered how single parents managed. He found out a lot of the managing involved desperation and exhaustion, and a complete lack of self anything at all. He lost weight, a pound here, a pound there, until he went from lean to gaunt. He barely recognized himself whenever he caught a glimpse in the mirror. But he didn't have time to do anything about it. In the fall, he went into the office after he took the kids to school, before he picked them up again. He worked out a routine that included hiring a weekly housekeeper to handle the cleaning chores he and Laura Lee had always managed to deal with. At Christmas, when he simply wanted to close himself in the dark and grieve all over again, he forced himself to put up a tree, to string lights, and broke down, thankfully alone, when he started to hang the stockings and unpacked Laura Lee's. The grief simply rolled through him, a dark, terrible wave that dropped him to the floor. How could he do this? How could anyone get through this? As he clutched the stocking, Jasper padded over to him, crawled into his lap, and laid his head on Raylan's shoulder. He pulled the dog in, held on and held on until the worst passed. He would do it, and he would get through it, because his kids slept upstairs, and they needed him. But instead of having Christmas morning at home, then driving to his mother's for the holiday dinner and Boxing Day, they had their little family Christmas the morning of Christmas Eve, then made the drive down. Santa brought the presents and filled the stocking early, he told the kids, because he knew they were going to Nana's. Because Santa knew everything. New traditions, he told himself. He had to make them so the old ones didn't break him into pieces he'd never put together again. So he got through the summer, the fall, and winter, and on the anniversary of Laura Lee's death, he sat alone in the dark, his kids asleep, and dreamed of her. She slid onto his lap as she'd often done in their quiet alone times. He smelled her, that soft floral fragrance she'd used. It filled him like breath.
You're doing fine, honey.
I don't want to do fine. I want you.
I know, but I'm here. I'm in the kids. I'm in here.
She laid a hand on his heart.
You just have to keep going. I know today's hard, but you'll get through it to tomorrow.
I want to go back. I want to stop you from going to work that day.
Can't.
She nuzzled at his throat.
And if I hadn't gone, that boy would be dead. Don't say you don't care, because that's not true. Who knows who he'll grow up to be? What wonderful things he might do.
He came to see me, Raylan murmured, with his parents. I didn't want to talk to them.
But you did.
They wanted me to know. They just wanted me to know how sorry, how grateful. I didn't want to care.
But you did.
They got permission to plant a tree on the school grounds. A dwarf cherry, the ornamental, that you can see from your classroom window. They wanted me to know they'd never forget you.
We can't know what other good and kind things he might do with his life. And if I hadn't been there, maybe whoever took my class wouldn't have gotten the other kids to safety. We can't know, honey. We just can't know.
We can't know what you'd have done with yours, what we'd have done with ours.
Oh, Raylan, I did what I had to do with mine, and I guess what I was meant to do. You know that. Now you're doing what you need to do. Remember how we talked the night before it happened, about how to tell the kids about Sophia?
We were going to tell them she had to become an angel, and she'd be looking out for them, for others who needed it.
It seemed the right thing because they're so young. But you can think of me that way too, because I'm always with you, Raylan. Honey, looking out for you and our babies.
Adrian wrote me. She said you were an angel,
Well, there you go, right?
She kissed him, so soft, so sweet.
I love you, Raylan.
And you have to let the grief go now. It's not the same as letting me go, the memories, the love.
Let the grief go now and turn it into something else. For me. For our babies.
I don't know if I can.
I know you can. I know you will.
She kissed him again, and then he sat alone in the dark. He got up, turned on the lights in his office. Though it was nearly midnight, he sat at his workstation. He began to sketch her, his Loralee. First her face. So many expressions. Happy, sad, angry, amused, seductive, surprised. Then her body, full front, profile, turned away. He filled pages of drawing paper before he added wings. He drew her with them folded, spread, with her flying with them, spinning with them, fighting with them. At first he drew her in a long white dress and immediately knew he'd gone wrong. White wings, yes, large, beautiful, and somehow ferocious. But her outfit should be bolder, stronger, fiercer than angelic white. He tried again, sketching her in a snug one-piece, slim boots, considered a halo, rejected it as too cliched. He brought the long sleeves into a point on the backs of the hands, dipped a V on the front of the boots. Simple, strong, and when he reached for his colored pencils, he chose blue, like her eyes. She'd died saving others, he thought, but before her time. A mistake in the order of things. So, she'd been given 100 years to live as human, but only if she continued to fight for others, to save them, to work for right, for the innocent. Lee. She'd be Lee Marley, part of her first name, a combo of their kids' names, in human form, in her alter ego. An artist. And when she spread her wings, when she was called to protect, she became True Angel. He pinned the sketch to his board. Before his kids waked in the morning, he had the outline of her origin story. He'd done what she asked, he thought. He'd let a little of the grief go and made it into something else. He got the kids dressed, hunted up the sparkly pink sneakers his daughter had to wear to preschool and couldn't find. Since that ate up time, he made Eggos for breakfast. Got some cheers for that. Bundling them in his night's work in the car, he did the drop-offs and headed into the office. And for the first time in a year, with real purpose, real excitement, he snagged Jonah first.
Jesus, Raylan, you look like hell. Like hell on uppers. All-nighter. I need a meeting with you and Bic. She just went up. Look, I need to round up Crystal for the lettering on after.
To save time, he dragged Jonah to the freight elevator.
I know yesterday was rough on you, but did you seriously do a bunch of drugs? Coffee. Too much coffee.
While the elevator started its moaning grind, Raylan texted Bic.
My office, right now. You hardly ever drink coffee. I did last night. I've got something.
He patted his bag.
I need you guys to see it. Give me your honest take. Okay, sure. But no more coffee for you. We've got a partners meeting this afternoon anyway. Why don't you catch a nap and we'll... No. Now.
He clamped a hand on Jonah's arm again, pulled him to his office. Opening his bag, he took out sketches, started pinning them up. Ignoring the half-finished work on his desk, he added the outlines, chapter by chapter, of the origin story.
She's beautiful.
Jonah spoke quietly.
It's Loralee. And she's beautiful.
Raylan shook his head.
She's Lee Marley, in human form. She's True Angel, guardian of the innocent.
Where's the fucking fire? Bic demanded as she came in. I've got...
Oh. She stopped, studied the sketches.
Those are fantastic, my man.
I need you to look these over. I need you to listen to the storyline. Then I need you to tell me if it's a go, not because you feel sorry for me, not because you loved her too, but because it's right. No, it has to be better than right if we go with this. If you see flaws, I want to know. If it doesn't work, I need to know. It's her face. It's her heart. So I need to know.
Jonah had already moved to the board, already started scanning the outlines.
You already know it works. You already know it's more than right. An homage to her, sure, but...
He broke off as his voice shook.
Take over,
he mumbled to Bick.
I'm reading.
I can tell you where it's going,
Raylan began.
I've already fleshed out the outline in my head.
Bick just wagged a finger at him.
Quiet. Move her from Brooklyn. Put her in Soho. Give her a loft in Soho. She works in the gallery downstairs to afford it.
Okay.
Raylan nodded as he thought it through.
Okay, and that keeps her in Manhattan. That's better.
You've got her saving this woman in a store robbery. Could it be a kid? Like a 10-year-old boy? Street kid? It's more poignant.
Could be better. I can work with it.
I'll tell you what. Having her code in the ambulance, them trying to bring her back while her spirit goes to what you call the in-between, that could be magic. How they've just called it when she's sent back? Breathes? Yeah. Could be magic.
She turned to him.
How hard is that going to be for you, to write and illustrate all that? Bringing her back.
It's going to be solace.
It already was.
It's going to be making something positive out of losing her. But only if I can make it matter.
It's going to matter. Jonah?
He'd pulled himself together, smiled now.
Here's to True Angel. Long may she fly.
They launched True Angel on the second anniversary of Laura Lee's death. Raylan pitted her against Grievous, the half-demon who infected human hosts until their ordinary resentments and frustrations turned to crazed violence. The work kept Raylan busy, involved, and the reader reception to his angel boosted his spirits and his company. But by summer and the end of another school year, he accepted he needed to make a change. For his kids, for himself, for the quality of his work. He took a long overdue vacation, a beach week with just the kids. With even the thought of work left behind, he tossed the rules on bedtime, on breakfast, so the world turned on sandcastles and sunscreen slathering, hot dog grilling, and clam bakes. He woke to the sound of ocean waves and kids bouncing on his bed. At night, if he hadn't succumbed to a sun and sea day coma like his kids, he sat on the little deck, watched the stars shower over the dark sea. When he dreamed of her, she wore a long white dress covered with purple flowers. He remembered the dress, one of the last he'd finally made himself pack up for donation. She stood at the deck rail with the ocean breeze streaming through her hair and the moonlight bathing her.
We always loved coming here. We talked about buying a cottage or bungalow one day.
She smiled as she looked over.
We never got around to it.
Too many things we never got around to.
Oh, we got to the important ones. They're sleeping inside right now, all curled up and sun-kissed with Jasper on guard.
He loves the beach as much as they do. I could buy a place now. True Angel's kicking serious butt. I could look on Cape May. It's closer to home, but...
It's hard, even for a good daddy to do everything.
I worry I let some of it slide. Baking 2 dozen cupcakes, gluten-free, for Bradley's class, making sure Mariah has the right color hair ribbon to match her outfit. That kid is fierce for fashion. How did you do it?
Honey, I had you. So if I couldn't get to the cupcakes, you picked them up at the bakery. If I couldn't find the hair ribbon, you found the hair clip with the flower on it that did the job.
She sat beside him, a comfort, picked up the glass of wine he'd barely touched.
There's no shame in needing help, Raylan.
It's not that. Every time I start down the road of looking for a nanny, it just feels wrong. For them, For us. I don't know why, but it feels wrong.
Yes, you do know why.
She patted his leg as she sipped his wine.
Just like you know what you should do, need to do, and in your heart want to do.
And that feels like leaving you, turning away from everything we had, that we built, that we wanted.
Oh, Raylan, honey, I left you. I didn't want to, I didn't mean to, but I left you. Now you have to do what's right for our babies, for yourself.
After setting down the wine, she kissed his cheek.
I count on you for that.
Then she rose, spread her white wings, and flew into the night. When he got back to Brooklyn, he made the painfully precise arrangements to set up a play date for both kids, then made the much simpler ones for a partner's meeting. This meant using the third-floor conference room and ordering in Chinese for lunch. Jonah, clean-shaven after his winter beard experiment, scooped up sweet and sour chicken.
Marta just got me the sales reports on Angel and Snow Raven, pre-orders for Queen's July issue. I'll shoot them out to both of you and put them up in here so we can eat real hearty. 'Cause we are kicking it, pals.
Good to know.
Deftly, Bick manipulated chopsticks in her noodles.
Because I peed on a stick this morning. Pat and I are going to have another mouth to feed next spring.
Holy crap!
Jonah pointed at her while Raylan sprang up to round the table and hug her.
You're knocked up?
That's affirmative. Keeping it down low for now, and we're going into the clinic for the official test, but you guys should know.
How are you doing? Raylan asked her. How are you feeling?
5x5 right now. May it continue. And really happy. Stupid, crazy happy. Look, I don't want to tell anybody else until I go to the docs, get the all clear, make sure everything's baking right. That means keep it zipped, Jonah.
He looked offended.
I can keep it zipped.
Usually we have to weld it shut, but this is important. Zipped until I give you the green.
How come you're not ragging on Raylan?
Because he doesn't blab.
Blab,
Jonah huffed.
I do, too.
Bick laughed, punched his shoulder.
A wise man knows himself.
This is great news, Bick. I'm happy for you and Pats.
I'm happy for us too, Raylan. Now, you called the meeting. Is this to tell us how you spent your summer vacation?
I can sum that up pretty easy. Pretty damn perfect. The kids loved it. I have to confess, Bradley continues his Dark Knight obsession. You have to do something about that kid,
Jonah told him.
An icon's an icon, but I had to make the difficult decision to help him recreate Wayne Manor out of sand. What? What about Snow Raven's Airy? It's cooler! He's only 7, Jonah.
Nearly 8, Raylan realized with a jolt.
Give him time. Now, before we see the numbers and deal with any other business, I need to ask you both, as partners, not friends, if me working from home puts any hitches in the company, in production, in creativity, and in the division of responsibilities.
You were working from home when you came up with True Angel,
Bick reminded him.
That's the opposite of hitches.
And we're already set up for you to work remotely over the rest of the summer, or the bulk of it,
Jonah put in.
We've got the tech, Rayman. Yeah, it's great when we can all be in the same building and brainstorm or make decisions or argue about decisions. But we're doing all that when we need to by video conference. How would you both feel if it wasn't just over the summer or school vacations or kid home sick days?
Bick sat back.
Is something wrong with the kids?
No, but I feel I have to do better for them. I'm not enough. They need more. They need family and a steadier routine than I can give them on my own. I put it off for me, and I can't keep doing that. I decided to move back home, back to Traveler's Creek. From Brooklyn to Boondocks?
Jonah said, obviously shocked.
I came from Boondocks to Brooklyn. Their grandmother's there, and they don't see enough of each other. Their aunt and uncle, their cousin, family. And I know they're all busy, but they'd be there. And so would we. I wouldn't have to send Mom a video of Moe's dance recital or Bradley's Little League game. She could be there. I know if I needed, they could sit and do homework in Rizzo's like I did.
This feels sudden, but it's not,
Bick said. No, Raylan thought. Not sudden at all.
I've been thinking about it for a while, but putting it off because selling that house we bought together, fixed up together, brought the kids home to when they were born, that felt like a betrayal.
It's not, Jonah murmured.
It's not. Appreciate that. I can take the train up or drive up maybe once a month or whatever works. And I wouldn't worry about the kids because they'd be with my mom or my sister. If it doesn't work, if it affects the company, I'll step out. You can buy me out and
shut the fuck up.
Bick stabbed a finger at him.
Ditto. This is our baby, womb to tomb. It's the three of us,
Jonah said.
Or it's none of us. You're the one who said let's make our own fucking comics. I was sort of drunk at the time. Well, we made our own fucking comics even after we sobered up. Maybe you're going to move to Schitt's Creek, but we've got three paddles.
Geez, Jonah.
Bick patted a hand on her heart.
You're a frigging poet. How do the kids feel about it? You wouldn't have told us if you hadn't talked to them first.
They're for it. It surprised me how fast they got on board. They have friends here, school, the house. But they're excited about it. Mo wants a house with a princess tower. I'm afraid Brad's pulling for a Wayne Manor.
Jesus!
Jonah only shook his head over his chicken.
The kid's killing me.
We'll live with Mom at first. At least, I'm going to dump that on her, because it'll take a while to find a place down there. And that's after the time it takes to deal with the house here. Get it ready to sell, put it on the market.
Don't.
Bick immediately slapped a hand to her mouth, eyes wide over it.
I can't keep two houses. The numbers aren't that good.
No, I mean, how would you feel if we bought it? Pats and me. Oh my God, I just said that.
Say it again?
It's crazy, right? But we were talking after I peed on the stick, and after we jumped around, we both said how we should buy a house. Stay close to her work and mine, but have a house, a yard. Kid-friendly neighborhood. Holy shit, what if we bought your house? Is that terrible? Would it be bad for you if people you knew lived in it? Would it...
His heart just opened wide, and all the good poured into it.
I can't think of anything that feels better. Not strangers. Family.
Really? Oh man, oh boy, I need to talk to her. I mean, she loves your house, but I can't just say deal.
It's meant.
Jonah ate more chicken.
I got the tingle in the bones. You know I don't get the bone tingles unless it's meant.
I'm going to go call her. You're sure about this?
Yes, I'm sure. In fact, I think I feel a slight bone tingle myself. That's my deal, man. You can't steal a man's tingle.
I'm going to call her right now.
Bix sprang up, then dropped down again.
No, put up the numbers first. I need to see the numbers before I go and buy a house.
Jonah chugged some Mountain Dew and grinned as he swiveled to his computer.
Let me preface this reveal by saying, we can all afford to buy a house.
Because the day begged for it, Adrian recorded her blog workout on the patio, opting for a quick, effective yoga session and ending sitting cross-legged on her mat, an arm around Sadie, who'd wandered over to join her.
Don't forget, flexibility is one of the essential legs on the fitness stool. Make time for it. Make time for you. Until next time, Sadie and I say enjoy today.
She clicked off the remote, nuzzled her dog.
And that's a wrap for this week.
You looked good, too.
She turned her head, spotted Dom.
Hey, I didn't know you were back. You should have come into it. You know people love seeing you on the blog.
I'll leave those down dogs to you and Sadie.
Tai Chi next week, then. You're good at it.
Maybe. How about we sit in the shade if you're not busy and enjoy some of this summer day?
Not busy. Sit, and I'll go get us some lemonade.
Wouldn't mind that a bit.
5 minutes. Stay with Poppy, Sadie.
When Dom sat at the little patio table, Sadie went to him, laid her big head on his thigh. As he stroked the dog, Dom looked out over the garden, one alive with summer. Tomatoes ripening, roses thriving, the big rosemary bush tossing scent into the air. He could hear the hum of bees, the song of birds. He hated knowing he couldn't do as much work in the garden as he used to, but knew Adrian liked picking up the slack.
She picks up a lot of slack, Sadie.
He watched her as she came down from the kitchen with a tray. The pitcher and glasses of ice, the little bowl of berries, the plates for fruit and cheese. A lot of slack, he thought again. How are things at Rizzo's?
A little slow this afternoon. People want to be out and about on a pretty day like this. But I've got news.
Gossip? Adrian wiggled her shoulders as she poured the lemonade, made the ice crackle. I love gossip.
More news than gossip, I'm afraid, but good news. Jan told me Raylan and his kids are moving back to the creek.
Really? Adrian popped a raspberry into her mouth. She must be thrilled.
Thrilled doesn't cover it.
What about his work, his company?
He'll work from here, go up to Brooklyn when he needs to. They'll stay with her until he finds a house. I'd say she'd be happy if that took forever.
He sipped some lemonade.
Just like your grandmother's.
I watched her make it enough times, which is something you still won't allow with your sauce. He smiled.
One day.
I've heard that before.
She tossed Sadie a blueberry, amusing everyone when the dog snatched it out of the air.
There is something I wanted to talk to you about.
Oh?
About the house, the business. I made the changes in my will long ago.
Oh, Poppy. He cut her off with a shake of his head.
A man, or woman, who doesn't put affairs in order is selfish and short-sighted. I like to think I'm neither.
You're not.
It occurred to me I'd never discussed it with you, and what I've done may be more burden than gift, leaving you the house and the business.
Oh, Poppy.
It's not only that your mother doesn't need either, but she wouldn't want them. This isn't her home and hasn't been for a long time. She's never had any real interest in the business. She has her own. But then so do you. I want you to be honest with me because these are responsibilities, ones that don't end. You may want to move back to New York. You may not want to think about owning another business.
I'm not moving anywhere. This is home. You know that. And Rizzo's isn't just a business, not to you, not to me, not to the town either. He'd expected just that, but still his heart lightened.
All right, then. I know I can trust you with both. As for what's inside the house, I'd ask you to let your mother have whatever she wants. Some of her mother's jewelry. Sophia wasn't one for the fancy, but there are sentimental pieces. And the furniture. The things. Lena should have what means something to her.
No question. I promise you.
You're a good girl. A treasure to me always, but in these last 2 years, I wouldn't have made it without you. Or you.
He rubbed Sadie's head again.
My big girl.
We love you, Poppy. And having this, she spread her arms. Having you, you gave me roots. It's made all the difference for me.
Seeing what you've grown from those roots makes me proud.
He let out a sigh.
Now that's done, and we do just what you said on your recording. Enjoy today.
Part 2. Changes. All things change. Nothing perishes. Ovid. Chapter 11. It wasn't as simple as loading up the car and heading south. It wasn't, Raylan discovered, even as basic as packing. First, you had to cull and purge and decide and organize, and guide a couple of kids into doing the same with all their stuff. How and when had they accumulated so much stuff? Then he had to deal with the baby stuff he and Laura Lee had tucked away, in anticipation of one or two more babies. It didn't hurt his heart as much as it might have, as he could offer it all, the crib, the bouncer, the changing table, the swing, the slings, the whole lot, to Bic. Whatever didn't work for her and Pat's, he'd donate. And because he could admit that other than his own office, he'd left most of the furniture choices to his wife, and because he didn't know what he'd need or want in the next house, he offered some of that as well. Even so, it took time to sort through and pack up 8 years, and all the memories that went with a bedside lamp or a set of pots, the birthday and Christmas gifts, even the living room rug, slightly chewed on one corner by the puppy Jasper had been. He rented the storage unit, hired the movers, canceled what needed canceling, transferred what needed transferring, and kept himself insanely busy for 3 weeks. At dawn on moving day, he wandered the nearly empty house, listening to the echoes of the life he'd had. Laughter, plenty of it, but tears, too. The wail of a teething baby at 2 a.m. The couch naps. Stubbed toes, spilled milk, morning coffee, tangled Christmas tree lights, first steps. Hopes and dreams. How did he say goodbye to all of that? Hands in the pockets of the sweatshorts he'd pulled on, he rounded back into the living room and spotted Bradley sitting on the steps. His boy had a sleep crease in his left cheek, bright hair tousled, big blue eyes still heavy, and watching him.
Hey, pal.
Don't be sad.
Raylan crossed over to the steps, sat beside his son, draped an arm over his shoulders. In his Batman PJs, what could you do? Bradley still smelled like a forest.
I'm not so sad.
I said goodbye to my friends and to my team, and to Mrs. Howley across the street. When I woke up, I said goodbye to my room.
Raylan hugged him closer, kissed the top of his head.
Am I doing the right thing, kid?
Mo's excited, but she's just a baby, whatever she says. I love Nana and Aunt Maya and Uncle Joe, and Colin's kind of funny. I like Nana's house and going to the pizza place where she works. And Ollie, who lives next door to Nana's, okay. But it's going to be different because it's not just a visit.
Yeah, it's going to be different.
When we get our own house, will she go with us?
Raylan didn't have to ask who.
She's in you and Mo as much as I am. Where you go, she goes.
Bradley leaned his head against his father.
Then it's okay. But when we get our new house, it can't be pink, right? No matter what she says.
Raylan understood this she referred to Mariah.
No pink house. That's a pact between men. How about a manly breakfast of Pop-Tarts before we get dressed? Get Mariah moving. We can get this adventure started.
Pop-Tarts! Can we stop at the place that has the McDonald's and get Happy Meals for lunch?
I'll put it on our travel agenda.
The agenda included the ceremonial passing of the keys to Bic and Pat's, a send-off by Jonah that included 2 sacks of travel snacks, games, comics that would have kept a busload of kids happy for a 5-hour drive, horn honking, waving, and a pit stop less than 30 minutes out when Mariah had to pee. That delicate dance, Raylan hovering outside the women's bathroom and feeling like a pervert, would be repeated at the lunch stop, which nobody actually needed with the sacks of snacks, and 15 minutes shy of target when both kids had to pee. And naturally, every pit stop required putting the leash on Jasper and walking him so he could pee. They arrived in Traveler's Creek with empty bladders and gummy worm sugar highs. Jan rushed out of the tidy house she'd lived in for more than 30 years, with her braid bouncing at her back and her eyes shining with happy tears.
You're here! Welcome home! I need hugs! I need them bad!
A little zoned from what had turned into a 5.5-hour drive, a little buzzed on sugar himself, Raylan peeled himself out of the car. Already unstrapping Mariah, Jan turned to give him a huge hug. Jasper leaped out to race in circles around the front yard, like a dog who'd suffered captivity for weeks.
"I've got a cold beer waiting for you," she murmured. "I bet you earned it."
"I did, and I'll take it. Mom, thanks."
"Stop!"
The kids talked nonstop, so his mother had the appropriate noises on tap. Amazement, disbelief, delight, as she herded them into the house.
"Your rooms are all ready, with surprises."
"What surprises?"
Mariah demanded.
"What?"
"Go and see." Shouting, shrieking, they shot up the stairs with Jasper barking and running behind them.
"I got an American Girl doll! Nana!"
"A remote-controlled Batmobile! It's so cool!"
"Batmobile, you're not helping my cause."
Raylan just put his arms around his mother, laid his cheek on her head.
"Mom, oh my boy, my baby. It's going to be fine. It's all going to be fine."
She turned, kept her arm around his waist as she led him back to the kitchen.
"Let's get you that beer. Now, if you're up for it, Maya and her crew are coming over for a family cookout, but that'll keep if you're not."
"No, that would be great."
She got out his beer, opened it. Once she'd handed it to him, she brushed at his hair.
"You're tired. You need a trim and a shave and a good night's sleep."
"It's been a crazy couple of weeks."
"You're here now. When you catch your breath, drink your beer. We'll get your stuff inside so you can settle. Raylan, I wish you'd take the bedroom."
"I'm not taking your bed. That's a firm negative. I'll be fine on the pullout in the den."
"With your big feet hanging over the bottom."
She leaned back against her snowy white kitchen counter.
"If I had my selfish way, I'd have that basement finished off and talk you into living here until the kids graduated college. But being a sensible woman, I know you need your own place."
"If the kids have their way, it'll be a hybrid of a pink castle and Wayne Manor."
"I don't know if I can help you there, but there's a house I think you're going to want to look at."
"Really?"
"I got the inside word, or Dom did. 2-story, 4-bedroom, home office on the first floor, quarter-acre lot, just renovated. Somebody bought it to flip and is just about ready to list it."
"Just about?"
"Inside word," she repeated. "It's on Mountain Laurel Lane."
"No kidding. Spencer used to live on Mountain Laurel Lane."
"His parents still do, a few doors down. It's next door to Adrian Rizzo's friends, Tisha and Monroe, and their little boy. They're nice people. They'd be good neighbors."
He smiled at her over his beer.
"Sounds like it's settled."
"You're going to want to look at more than one, I expect, but I'm betting this one checks some boxes. Dom told the owner he had somebody who'd want to take a look right off and got me the name and number for you to call."
"Then I will. How's Dom?"
"He's good. Slowing down some, but he's good. Having his granddaughter with him's made a difference. Like having you and the kids here makes one for me."
The kids ran in to throw their arms around Jan's legs, babbling their thank yous. She smiled over at Raylan.
"All the difference there is."
They hauled luggage in, toys in, his equipment and tools. Since it obviously pleased her, he let her help Mariah put her things into Maya's old room, Bradley into his, while Raylan did what he could to make his nest in the first floor den. He squeezed in a workspace, put the rest of his things in the hall closet his mother had already cleaned out for him. The main level had a tiny bathroom with a tiny corner shower, and that would do fine, for a while. Mountain Laurel Lane, he thought, and stretched out on the couch in the den for just a minute. He'd run that street, those sidewalks and yards as a kid. So maybe. He woke, groggy, disoriented, stiff as a board, and with his sister standing in the doorway with 2 glasses of wine and a smile.
"You saved me from waking you."
He sat up, rubbed the back of his aching neck.
"Jesus Christ, how did I forget how uncomfortable this pullout is?"
"Stretch it out, soldier. Dinner's in an hour. The kids, yours and mine, are outside with the dog. Joe's arguing with Mom over control of the grill."
"What are we having?"
He stood, rolled his shoulders, tried to stretch out his back. In honor of your homecoming, it's steak, baked potatoes, grilled corn and vegetables, tomatoes and mozzarella, and cherry pie.
That's a damn good deal.
He smiled.
Hi.
Hi. She went in for a hug, handed him a glass. Let's take a walk around, front to back. Get your blood moving again and catch up a little before we hit the crowd.
I didn't mean to drop off like that, dump the kids on Mom.
She's in heaven, so are the kids. Good job, Raylan.
I hope so.
They went out the front and he paused to scan the neighborhood where he'd grown up. Some changes, sure, but not many, and the same easy feel to it.
It feels good. I wasn't sure it would. How's business?
It's good, too. I love it.
And I wasn't sure I would.
Aren't we the lucky ones?
Mom's done a good job.
They walked around hydrangea bushes, pregnant with fat pink blossoms.
I hear you might put down stakes on Mountain Laurel Lane.
I haven't even seen the house yet, or any.
It's a pretty house, at least from the outside. Paul Wicker. He was in your class.
Biker dude. Rough customer.
This is his older brother, Mark, a contractor. He bought the house to flip. Paul, not so much a rough customer now, works for him. Anyway, I can tell you about your closest neighbors.
They ducked under the branches of a red maple as they walked around to the side of the house.
They're terrific. Monroe's a songwriter. Tisha's Adrian Rizzo's business manager. Their kid, Phineas, is Colin's best pal, so I know them really well.
Maybe I'll call former rough customer Paul's contractor brother tomorrow.
She tapped her glass to his before she drank.
Why not now?
He heard his kids playing in the backyard where he'd once battled supervillains, shot hoops, mowed grass. Maybe a phone call could give him the next step on giving them their own.
I can do that.
New Orleans, Louisiana. The alley steamed, a pot of gumbo on the simmer, even past 2 in the morning. The dumpster stank from the day's baking. But she always left the bar last, always by the alley door.
Stupid.
Just stupid, for an educated woman with a degree in business management, another in hospitality.
But she thought because she kept herself buff, because she carried a taser and an illegal knife, she could handle what came. She wouldn't handle this,
or anything else after tonight.
Another slut, twice divorced, with an ego so big she'd named her bar after herself. Stella's. Stella Clancy, who'd already poured her last shot. Now it was just wait, sweating under the disposable black coveralls for her to come out the door, lock up before her half a block walk to her apartment. She'd never get there. She'd die in the stink of the alley like she deserved. Near to 3, she came out, her whore-dyed red hair cut short to show off the tattoo on the back of her neck. The pipe struck there first. She went down like a tree, a toughly built woman in a skinny strapped top and shorts that barely covered her crotch. Whore. She never made a sound. Blood flew as the pipe struck the back of her skull. It struck again and again, shattering bones after she'd stopped breathing.
Too much fun.
Yes. Too much fun. Pull back. Get control. Job's done. Take her watch, the ugly, gaudy ring, the cheap purse. Smile, bitch. Take the photo. Bag up the souvenirs, strip off the bloodied coveralls. Bag them with the pipe. Into the Mississippi with that bag. Then hunt up a bar. Have a drink. Maybe try the hurricane like a real tourist. Before it was on the road again. The dog woke him early. Raylan calculated the pullout aged him about 30 years as he creakily crawled out of it. He dragged on gym shorts, led the prancing Jasper into the kitchen, grabbed a Coke out of the fridge before he opened the back door. Jasper shot out like a rocket. And in the hazy morning heat, Raylan leaned on the door jamb while Jasper sniffed around the yard to decide where to complete his morning necessities. A considerate and oddly poop-shy dog, Jasper wandered out to the back fence and behind a butterfly bush. Used to the routine, Raylan waited in the quiet, so different from the morning bustle of Brooklyn. He'd done the right thing. If he'd had any lingering doubts about the move, they'd dissolved the evening before around the old, newly painted bright blue picnic table, where his kids feasted and chattered like cocaine-fueled magpies. And Joe, with his John Lennon glasses and Orioles fielder's cap, bounced Colin on his knee, despite the boy's sauce-smeared hands and face. With his sister holding a heartfelt discussion on fashion with Mariah, and his mom looking as if he'd given her the world. He fed the dog, started coffee so his mother wouldn't have to, then worked out the worst of the creaks in the shower. He reminded himself to shave and, studying himself, considered the abject terror of risking a haircut with an unfamiliar barber. He could put that one off a while longer. By the time he'd dressed, Jan was at the kitchen counter drinking coffee with Jasper sprawled at her feet.
A treat to wake up to coffee.
He walked around the counter, hugged her from behind.
Kids still asleep?
We wore them out. You want some breakfast?
I ate enough last night to hold me for a couple of days.
You could use a few more pounds, Slim.
Probably, he thought. He'd gained back some of what he'd lost in the first year after Laura Lee's death, but he wasn't back to fighting weight.
With your cooking, if I don't watch it, it'll be more than a few. Maybe you could post your work schedule like you used to. We can rotate cooking nights. I'm a lot better at putting a meal together than I used to be.
You couldn't have gotten much worse.
Ouch.
Egg bread blobs, grilled cheese flambé.
Early experimental work.
Since the kids are obviously healthy and well-fed, I'll take you at your word you've moved into a later period.
I'll surprise you.
He kissed the top of her head.
I'm going to have to wake up the slugs, get them moving if we're going to make that appointment to see the house.
Let them sleep a while. They can go into work with me.
You want to take them into work?
I took you and Maya when I had to. You know the drill.
He sat beside her a minute.
Help do the setups, make sure the closing crew didn't skimp on cleaning the tables and chairs, and earn quarters for the video machines.
Do the work, get the pay.
Are you sure?
I'd love it, and you should take a look without them. If it strikes a chord, you can come by and pick them up to go see it. Get their reaction.
You're a sensible woman, Jan Marie.
I'm all that.
She got up to top off her coffee, squeeze a little of her creamer into it.
And who knows better what it's like to be a single parent with two kids and a full-time job? The Rizzos gave me more help than I can ever repay.
I know it.
Then the neighbors, the community. You've got that now. And me, Maya, and Joe. We can rotate more than cooking dinner, and we will. Meanwhile, you've got more than finding a house to deal with. You've got to settle on a pediatrician, a dentist, get them registered for school, find a vet, get a haircut.
He shot his fingers through his hair.
I'm not going there yet. I need to work up to that one. The rest I was going to start on today.
I can tell you there's a dentist in town now. I've been using him for the last year or so, and I'm happy with him. He's got offices right across from the fire department, so there's even off-street parking.
Sold.
Now he ran his tongue over his teeth.
I guess.
As for the haircut, there's always bills.
They scalp you there.
He poked at her.
You know they scalp you there. You never made me go there.
Because I loved you and your Goldilocks.
He rolled his eyes at her.
Then you'll love the man bun when I grow into it.
She laughed, shook her head.
I'm going up, getting dressed. I'll get the kids going, get some breakfast in them.
He'd forgotten what it was like to have someone else do something that basic.
If you're sure, I'll take Jasper with me. We'll both get a walk in. I'll see more of the neighborhood if I walk over instead of drive.
You do that. I should tell you, there's another house already on the market. It's down the other side of town, closer to the school, so that might suit you better. It's got a smaller yard, but it's got one. It hasn't been remodeled, so it's likely going for less. Sturdy, red brick place, decent front porch, on Schoolhouse Drive.
Good to know.
Take your time,
she said as she rose.
We'll see you at the shop when you get there.
He took his time, rounding up the dog, the leash, digging up the pooper scooper and bag, sticking them in his pocket. He found his sunglasses, considered his Mets cap, then, thinking of Orioles land, left it behind. Jasper's head swiveled right left in the dog's fascination with the new surroundings. Since he didn't have to hurry, Raylan tolerated the many pauses for avid sniffing, the occasional leg lift to dribble out some pee to show his manliness. He stopped at the corner a block off Main, where a woman in a straw hat snipped off the dead blooms on an enormous climbing rose. She wore pink, knee-length shorts that showed skinny, ghost-white legs spiderwebbed with purple veins. Mrs. Pinsky, he remembered. He'd mown her lawn every week for 3 summers. Between mowing jobs and his part-time work at Rizzo's, he'd saved enough to buy his first shitpile of a car. He'd thought Mrs. Pinsky 1,000 years old when he was 15. And here she was, still deadheading roses.
Hey, Mrs. Pinsky.
She looked over, narrowing her eyes behind her glasses, putting a hand to her ear and hearing aid.
What?
It's Raylan Wells, Mrs. Pinsky. Jan Wells' son.
You're Jan's boy.
She put a hand on her hip.
You come to visit your ma?
I'm moving back to the creek.
Is that so? Moved away to some godforsaken place, didn't you?
Yes, ma'am.
Your ma's a fine woman.
The best there is.
It's good you know that. You used to mow my grass. You looking for work?
No, ma'am. I've got a job.
Can't get anybody to cut my damn grass who doesn't want my right leg and left foot.
She'd watched him like a hawk, he recalled, but had always paid him fair, and usually added a couple of cookies and a glass of something cold as a tip.
I'll mow it for you,
he heard himself say, right before he wanted to kick himself in the ass. She eyed him sternly.
How much?
No charge.
A body does a job, a body gets paid for it.
I might buy a house around on Mountain Laurel Lane. If I do, we'd be neighbors. Neighbors do for neighbors.
That got a smile.
Your ma raised you right. Mowers around back in the shed.
Yes, ma'am. I have to go look at that house right now. I've got an appointment there. I'll take care of it on the way back, if that's okay.
That'll do. Thank you kindly.
He walked on, warning himself not to volunteer if he happened to spot someone else he remembered. Now he had to carve out time every week to mow her lawn, and he'd already committed himself, to himself, to take over that chore for his mom. He had to buy a house, move into it, and cut that lawn.
Why didn't you tell me to shut up?
He asked the dog, before I ended up back in the mowing business. He reached the next corner and Mountain Laurel Lane and stopped dead. It wasn't the house, obviously not the one he'd come to see, as a woman with a visible baby bump stood in the open front door. It wasn't the woman in the door that stopped him, but the one with her back to him. She had a cloud of midnight hair curling